Welcome to Machine Visions, a show about the acceleration of robotics deployed across every sector of our economy. I'm Nan Lee, Managing Director at Obvious Ventures. In this five-part series, we dive into the current breakout moment in industrial robotics, where next-gen robots are taking on new challenges and scaling rapidly in production. We'll bring you the inside story from leading voices in this industry to understand what's happening today and what's to come. Today's episode features Greg Brown, VP of the Global Advanced Technology Group at UPS. Greg's been at UPS for 25 years and is one of the most authoritative voices in supply chain transformation. We talk about how robotics fits into UPS today and Greg's suggestions for entrepreneurs building solutions in the space. You've had a stellar rise through the organization over the better part of two decades, and you actually started out, I believe, in operations and now sit at the highest level in terms of strategy and R&D. So curious, first of all, to get your take on how has your experience firsthand in operations influenced your work as an executive, especially an executive that looks at R&D?
Because I started out as UPS, we would call it an unloader, a loader, a sorter, someone that worked in the pickoff. As an executive, I can put myself back in those jobs, just like it was like I was there yesterday, and imagine what it took to do the job. And I think that one of the hardest things that there is, it's not just the technology, it's also fitting it in with the business need, being able to meet the rates that are required, being able to do the job on a day-to-day basis. And that's very difficult. If you don't have a good understanding of what is needed, you certainly can't deliver on solutions that work for your internal customers.
Taking a step back, you're currently VP of the Global Advanced Technology Group at UPS. So what does your team focus on?
We have five different pillars that we focus on. One is data-driven decisions. So leveraging data to bring insight and then really presenting that to our operators and people in the field at the right time to make the best decisions. Second is robotics and automation. A third could be IoT and sensor technology. A fourth would be autonomous vehicles. And then the fifth would be small to large drones. So thinking about how we can leverage drones in the logistics space for first, middle, and last mile.
Of course, I think everyone in America has personal experiences on a near daily basis with UPS. But backing up, what's the mission of UPS broadly as a company? And how do some of those initiatives that you outlined, which are technical, fit into that higher level goal?
So I'll say our mission statement is moving our world forward by delivering what matters. And if you think about some of these pandemic type situations or just a normal customer wanting to move the things that they care about through the network, also can include critical vaccines or other medical products, all those things, UPS has to think logistically, how do we move those things through our network? All those emerging technology pillars enable us to ensure that we can move those products, regardless of what may happen in the supply chain, So to meet the needs of our customers. So our mission statement, again, moving our world forward by delivering what matters, we'll leverage all those pillars to continue to do that, even as the customer need changes and or we have these unique scenarios like pandemics that may come about.
To get back to your point about connecting technology with business needs, the 360 context that's required to get technology to work in the field is often very different from technology working in isolation or in a demo setting. So is this something that you try to suss out early with vendors that you're working with?
What we try to do is make sure that the vendor, the company we're working with, and or the technology that we are exploring, that it's the right fit. From a vendor standpoint, we really show them, just like I just talked about me being in the building, I'm able to transport myself back into the role. I try to give that to our vendors. The way I do that is I give them our videos, show them the real working environments, you know, before they come to me and say, I have a widget or a solution. If it's a company that I know we're going to do business with, we sign a non-disclosure agreement, I show them our internal processes. If they come back and say, out of those 100 jobs or 150 jobs, we believe we have widgets that can solve 20 of them. Then we can do a deeper dive into those. I'll give them additional data about the package mix, about all the things that they would need in order to solve the problem. And as we continue, it's really more of a confirmation that that vendor or that software, the solution is the right fit. Because the last thing you want to do is spend all the time required to build a product, which building a product is difficult. It's hard. And then at the end of it, there's nothing to show for it. So we really want to get alignment up front.
In terms of evaluating if a technology is the right fit, how do you make sure that you're always up to date on the needs of the org when you're matchmaking and looking at different technologies?
One of the things that I try to do is whenever we start a new solution, before we get too far, I'll bring the operator to the front end of the process and really lay out, here's what we're thinking that's going to solve the problem. And then we get their buy-in, because the last thing you want to do is have the product start off on the wrong foot, if you will, and really not really solve the problem, not really meet the need. And that means it won't go anywhere. Also say, just because I've been around with UPS for 25 plus, 26 years, I'll call it this year, I'm able to go out and make the connection with the people in the field and talk to them. And in some cases, lay out kind of what we're thinking, especially in the facility that I started out at. I have a number of connections still with the people there, and I can certainly talk openly with them. And the good thing about that is they will tell you very frankly if they believe that this idea is good or not. There's no ulterior motives there. They're just going to tell you this works, it doesn't work.
So how have you seen your business change in the past 18 months, operating during COVID and with perhaps even additional demands caused by COVID in consumer and in the sort of enterprise segment?
In the last 18 months, certainly there was an explosion of volume in our facilities. So we had to make sure our processes were first safe, right, for those people that were in the buildings, following all the protocols and procedures. But at the same time, make sure that we can deal with this volume that was generated during that time.
And in terms of that above normal volume and sort of operating conditions from the last 18 months, has that shone a light on certain investment opportunities and R&D initiatives at UPS?
I think so, because what it does is it helps you to realize that if we're going to be in these types of situations in the future, we've got to rethink a little bit how we move product. And we always knew that as the world switched from B2B to B2C, we had to prepare for more volume moving in that way, or more e-commerce type packages. So we were already kind of getting ready for it. So the pandemic just really expedited any plans that we had in order to get ready for a switch from B2B to B2C. And I think that when you think about making that switch, some of the technologies that I think helped us to really rethink things are like AI and machine learning and these types of things, because now you can really get a handle on the things that are moving in your network and really focus on how do I make my process more efficient? How do I make data-driven decisions? I really pivoted and put a tremendous amount of focus on that pillar, because with the data that we have and with the capabilities that are available, it's a quick change that we can make. Before, I think that there was robotics and automation. Certainly people wanted to do it, but in order to turn a robot or some automation into a product that works in your facility. When I mean work, I mean it does 80, 90% of the job. It actually has an ROI that makes sense. The payback picture makes sense. So it's a good business decision. And it actually enables you on a day-to-day basis to actually do something useful. I think machine vision is an enabler that allows you to take those robots that came out of the automotive industry and then turn them into something that is certainly useful in a day-to-day operation.
And does that increased focus on machine vision, robotics, and automation change in practice how you partner with companies and just the internal mindset at UPS today?
There are a sea of choices in terms of people that want to enter this space. And I think that the thing that differentiates them is, again, the ROI, being able to do the job. And then some are more advanced in the areas of AI, machine learning, and certainly machine vision specifically. When it comes to automation, it's not a matter of one piece of the puzzle. It's about orchestrating all of these different types of emerging technology, bring in IoT and sensor technology, bring in high-speed cameras, and all those things. All of them have to work together in order to meet the need. So the thing that differentiates the vendor that we work with or our internal developments is the ability to have a mindset that orchestrates all of that to work together and in a seamless way.
Shifting gears a bit, I think it's difficult to overstate how much of a footprint UPS has in the logistics sector. So you have this very unique bird's eye view, and you see almost a cross-section of logistics across every sector. So curious what you've learned about sector-specific needs in some of the areas where you operate that pair well with R&D initiatives and sort of next-gen supply chain initiatives.
So when I look at the challenges around supply chains, I think there are three major areas to consider. One is labor competition. I think there are a number of people that, you know, UPS would like to hire, FedEx would like to hire, DHL would like to hire. We're all kind of hiring from the same labor pool. So I think the competition used to be amongst those logistics companies trying to figure out how do they hire for their peak times. And now that labor competition, I think, is extended as there's a lot of opportunity for people to work at their place of choice. So labor competition, I think, is number one. Two is scaling any solution that you are developing in your network, because when you look at a network of the size of UPS, anything that you develop has to scale across really the globe, if you will, because we're a global company in terms of what we're developing. And that could be a challenge. Many people are thinking about that. And the third would be cost of infrastructure. One of the areas of focus for me is autonomous vehicles. As I think about electric vehicles or the infrastructure required to charge those types of vehicles, certainly that is a tall task in order to develop out all of the charge points that you'll need throughout the network. So I think those are the three, in my mind, the biggest challenges for supply chain problems that many people may have.
And in terms of going about addressing those challenges, do you have any advice for startups that are working in areas like AI, robotics, automation? How can they differentiate themselves to your group and rise above the rest? What are some indications and even customer discovery tactics that are effective to show you that they're ready for deployment, ready for production?
So I'll answer that question, not just for UPS, or more for anyone. I think there's four major things. One is, as a company, you really need to understand what is your strength for your company. The worst thing that can happen, in my mind, is that if your true strength is A and UPS needs B, and you try to change who you are to go after B, it's the worst thing. It does not lead to a win-win situation. It leads to something that doesn't work as well. And in the end, it doesn't help me. It doesn't help you. So go after your strengths. Second thing is, in terms of performing customer discoveries, before you go and build your solution completely, you start with like an MVP, and then you check for alignment. Does this product that I'm thinking about, does it make sense for you as a customer? And then you get their feedback. Because what will happen is, if you build it out completely, then you're going to over-engineer it. It's going to cost way too much, and it doesn't help me, doesn't help you. Third thing is, I'll say that those companies that are building their teams or build your company with their core group that allows you to, one, line up with your strength, outsource some of those skills where needed to bring on talent based off the need. That way you can align to a business model that makes sense. Worst thing you can do is hire a bunch of people and try to figure out where they go and how they fit, and then do a project with me that doesn't work, and then you go out of business. That's the last thing I want. Fourth thing I would say is, when you think about your go-to-market plan, there really should be variability in your cost model or how you do business. So at UPS, we can do a CapEx model, and also certainly interested in an OpEx model. I think if you have that variability, it allows us to scale together quickly, especially as at times there could be some CapEx constraints to kind of think about.
I'm curious, in terms of getting to the bottom of some of those underlying truths about the nature of the problem that you have or the nature of the solution, who typically volunteers that information? Is it an ongoing dialogue? If we just look at CapEx versus OpEx and pricing, how do you get to this alignment with a company that you are potentially partnering with on that topic?
I'll say, I think that if this information is available on the front end, I think it's certainly something we can talk about. But I'll say that at the same time, we have to have a working product to talk about scaling, right? So if we don't have anything that works, then there's really not a conversation about the cost model. Is it OpEx or CapEx? I think that from a placeholder standpoint, I need to understand what's possible as we discuss things. But I think that upfront, it has to be able to work. It has to be something that fits within our willingness to pay, because I don't want to deploy technology for the sake of deploying technology. I need to, one, make sure it works, as I mentioned. Secondly, it's got to fit within our cost model so that it's sustainable going forward, because I don't want to introduce something to my internal customers that they cannot afford, because it just won't go anywhere. So that alignment is critical. And I think if we can align up front, it's always good. Align on the requirements. So what is it? What does this thing need to be able to do from a pieces per hour standpoint? How long does it need to last? How many hours does it need to operate? What is the window in terms of the cost? These are all critical things. And I think certainly you do them in a certain order, but I think these are conversations we can have up front. You know, as I kind of mentioned, we'll show you the videos, show you internal operations. We'll give you the requirements. These are things that we can give you up front for alignment.
From your perspective, what is a situation where CapEx would be the preferred method versus one where OpEx would be preferred?
So I'll say that CapEx might make sense if, when you look over the next 3 years, you're able to pay back on whatever you've invested. Now, some of that is based off what it costs to run the current operation, right? So what is the current cost to do what you do today? Now, there could be some situations where the labor costs or the cost of doing that business is so low already that to compete with a CapEx type model is difficult. However, an OpEx model allows you to pay as you use, or pay by the pick, pay by the use. And then this then more aligns with your operational model that you really are investing in annually anyway. So then it kind of better aligns in that case where the cost of operation is so low that CapEx doesn't make sense, then OpEx can kick in and you just pay by the pick, pay by the use.
What tells you when a company is ready to scale with its deployments? And for the deployments that you have seen scale, what are some leading indicators that that scaling can be done successfully?
I'll break the world in two. There is automation, in which UPS has been doing that for a while. And I think we have a lot of data that tells us what good looks like, and certainly easy to detect if a company is able to operate throughout the course of a sort at UPS, which could be 4 hours, 3.5 hours, or throughout the course of a day. It's highly reliable. So when we test and we validate the system, we can see through the testing, based off our experience, it's very clear that this solution is hitting all the metric checkpoints that we put out in front. We're good to go. I think we can scale. When it comes to like robotics, some of this is a new area in the logistics space as it's being applied to supply chains. For the automotive industry, it's been out there, it's hardened. Certainly, it's very clear how we can move that forward. For our internal supply chain, we're developing those metrics, we're developing those requirements. And certainly based off that robot working in our operation every day for the course of the 4 hours, like a human would, that would be the metric that we will leverage for determining whether solutions are ready to scale. Because these robots could be in these similar situations as a human would be, and certainly we can tell based off what we ask a human to do, can the robot do those things? And certainly that becomes our guide to measure.
Right. And a lot of companies that work in supply chain innovation typically bring a lot of expertise on the technology side, whether it be AI or advanced robotics or systems engineering, but they lack awareness on the daily operations. And something that comes up as a term is unknown unknowns of, you know, learning from the real world. So I'm interested to get your take on what are some common, just a couple unknown unknowns that can trip up a project from being successful that startups and founders should look out for?
Unknown unknowns are how long does that particular solution last? So at UPS, if you think about all the different parcels and packages that we ship, today you could pick up an 8-pound box. Tomorrow could be a 10-pound box, or you know, it could be a poly bag. It'd be the mix is different. So the robot or machine or whatever it is has to be able to adapt to that dynamic environment. By adapting to that dynamic environment, the wear and tear on the equipment might be different. So you have to make sure that whatever you're developing, whether it be machine vision related, whether it be automation related, robots, whatever it may be, has to be able to adapt to the rigor of our product mix and work environments. And just add on to that work environment, there's different types of the year where the building is colder, it's hotter, there's dust and all those types of things. Whatever you're developing has to be able to operate in those environments. So you have to make sure that your solution is hardened, I'll call it, to withstand these industrial environments that they have to operate in.
That's truly golden advice. I can't tell you how many companies have been tripped up by realities of production systems and the facilities that they're in that you just can't think of in a lab or in an R&D facility. So that's really helpful. And across the operational footprint of UPS, which includes so much, it includes picking, pallet work, conveyor belt, kitting, truck operations, last mile logistics and local delivery, the whole spectrum. Is there an area that excites you the most in terms of the ripeness of the opportunity and how much transformation, you know, you see in the next 5 years?
I don't know if I want to get too specific, but what I'll say is any situation where you're able to look at a pile of packages and pick from the pile specific packages that you can then move them to the next part of the process, or anything where you have to pick from the pile and then move them to sort even. I think these types of activities are possible with robotics. Certainly exciting because you can bring together the robotics, machine learning, or machine vision, and you can fit robots within a smaller footprint. And the alternative would be, you know, automation. Automation takes up more space, requires higher speeds. Robots and things of this nature can fit within some of these smaller footprints. And certainly that's the thing that is exciting about, you know, thinking about how we can leverage robots.
That terminology may not be apparent to many in the audience. How do you see robots being different from automation?
So I'll say that the robots have a smaller footprint, as I just mentioned. And because of that, there's different places where you can put a robot where I can't put a singulator or conveying belts or, you know, typical automation will be positive sorting machines where I send packages based off the camera read to the right location. I mean, it requires a lot of space and room and sometimes cost because you've got to go and get a turnkey vendor to come in and to orchestrate all of that. I might have to demo the existing to build out the new. And I think that robots and things of this nature, you can target where you put them in your operation with a smaller footprint, smaller cost point, and then maybe even lesser cost in the end for what you're getting.
Speaking more broadly, what excites you about the next 5 years in industrial transformation?
I mentioned the five pillars that we have at UPS that we're working on specifically in the Advanced Technology Group. And what excites me is that I can now start to blend all these techniques together, IoT and sensor technology, robotics and automation, and all these other pillars that I mentioned before, to reimagine our internal operations and our network to meet the needs of our customer. And I think that when I got into this particular job, some of this was POCs, it was proof of concepts. Maybe it's possible. Now I can say it's possible in the next 5 years, in the next one or two years or sooner, to really leverage this technology to change our operations, to change our network around and meet the needs of our customer and deliver what matters most to our customers.
Yes, that's a great way to end things. Thank you, Greg. I share your optimism for the potential of the technology and the pragmatism that the technology alone in isolation or in a demo setting is not meaningful. And I think technologists, founders, investors are all trying to push the envelope so that these systems can be deployed in production. And we hope to see that on your timeline in the next 5, if not 2, if not 1 years.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining us. And this has been fantastic.
No problem. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
That was Greg Brown, VP of the Global Advanced Technology Group at UPS. Thanks for listening to episode 3 of our 5-part series on next-gen robotics. In episode 4, we speak with Maria Tejeria, co-founder and CTO of Canvas Construction.
We knew that we had de-risked the major parts of the technology. Then it was like, okay, let's go after growth and really start talking about how do you scale this up? How do you increase the productivity of the machine, but also how do you increase the number of customers that you're serving?
Machine Visions is produced by Obvious Ventures in partnership with Pod People. Obvious invests in purpose-driven companies reimagining trillion-dollar industries. To learn more about us and where we invest, head to obvious.com. Special thanks to our production team, Gabe Kleiman and Liz Ganaw from Obvious, and the team at Pod People, Rachel King, Amy Machado, Emily Shaw, Madison Lesby, and Veronica Simonetti. I'm Nan Lee. We'll see you next time.